Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is photographer Sally Davies. The latest publication of her work can be found in the book, California Dreamers. Sally, welcome back to the show. It is a pleasure to talk to you again. We've been actually talking for a long time, audience, before we talk to you.
Getting warmed up.
Now, we talked about your two books, okay, California Dreamers and the one about New York. But that was just collections of your really beautiful photography. I had to know more about you as an artist. But before we do anything, and I'm afraid we'd run out of time, I have to talk to you about the McDonald's Happy Meal Project. Because I saw the photographs on your website. I'm skeptical. But tell me about this and how this started.
Well, I'll give you the cliff notes.
I don't want the cliff notes. I want all the details. I want the juicy details.
One of my best and very old friends, Phil Scotty, he owns the T.J. Clark's restaurant chain in New York and other places. I was up at him and his wife's place one weekend, and I found some story on the internet about some teacher that had a 10-year-old McDonald's burger.
Wow.
And I'm a vegetarian, and all these people are meat eaters, so it's always a contentious moment. And I said, oh, my God, look at this story. Isn't this amazing? My friend Phil said, that's ridiculous. Do you believe everything you read on the internet?
Sally, that was my reaction to your project.
No, I know. I get it. I really do. So the weekend ended, I went home. I walked to the closest McDonald's to where I live in New York and bought a Happy Meal. And I thought, I'm just going to take this home. I'm just going to see what happens.
Oh, my God.
So I put it on the table. And the next day, the smell was gone. It was over. So I thought, I'm just going to start taking photos of this, right? And putting the day on them, like kind of documenting the deterioration of.
Now, did you put it under a bell jar or something?
Well, around year 3 or 4, I did that. Because it was not because of any rot or anything like that. I mean, it was 4 or 5 years later, but it was getting really dusty. Because it was just sitting out. And I had 2 dogs at the time, and, you know, the New York Times covered every... Okay, so anyway, let me get to the thing. So a friend of mine at the time had a very big website, a news site. And she called me one day, and I had been showing her to these for a chuckle, and she called me and she said, we got a slow day here. Do you want to have a laugh and send us those things, those photos? So I sent them, went up. Went American viral by that night.
Wow.
It was a riot. So that kind of came and went. And I mean viral, like the New York Times, like everybody covered it. Toronto Life, like a lot of places. So about a month later, I get an email from this news site in Britain saying, you don't get paid for any of this, right? So it's just whatever. So this guy writes me.
It's publicity. There can't be any bad publicity.
Yeah, I guess, so the guy writes me and he says, I don't know if anybody's going to be interested in this. It kind of made the rounds already, but do you want to put it up on the block tonight? See if anybody buys it. That's how those news things work. So I go, yeah, why not? I go to bed, get up in the morning, open my email. There's about 150 emails. I maybe get 5 emails a day, right? 150 emails asking for an interview or a media request for press. So I was like, what the actual hell is this? And I mean, Mark, Indian Times, Africa Times, Beijing Times, like everywhere bought it. So, by that night, I kind of live in a little one-bedroom apartment in the East Village, right? In New York City. So by that night, there was I am not making this up. There was TV stations camping out like I was Princess Di.
Oh, wow.
In front of my little building.
Wow.
Buzzing my buzzer. We've been out here for 4 hours. Can we please come on? CNN sent somebody over. Jay Leno covered it that night on his show. The Daily Mail did a whole thing. Oh, it was just insane. Really nutty. And I, by the way, I'm still doing it.
Well, that's the part. That's the part that's missing. So you have this thing, and it gets this huge media attention. But like everything in the media, it passes. But you're still you're still doing it.
Well, I bought the burger on April 10th, 2010.
Oh my God!
So what's that? 13
okay, now
years ago.
Sally, no, be truthful to me. There's been no kind of weird. What's the patty like? It's got to have turned like into weird stuff, isn't it?
No, no, no. And I'm when we hang up, I'll send you the. I'll take a picture of it this morning and I'll send it to you.
Oh my God, Sally!
The patty. Okay, when you lift up the lid to the thing.
Yeah.
It smells like a Payless shoe store. Like it does. It smells like plastic. And you know that smell.
Oh,
like
my God, yes.
So the bun has cracked, and a little piece of the bun has fallen off. I mean, you know, 13 years. But it's still in the same shape. The fries are still fries.
Oh, Jesus.
And the bun just got littler. Because it petrified, like it went rock hard, like a piece of plastic.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did you ever hear from the McDonald's Corporation?
I did.
Uh-oh.
I heard from them in three different locations: Toronto, Chicago, and somewhere else. The Toronto, and two of the three times they were very nice and. They just said, you know, we don't know who this woman is, and we're not commenting on this. But there was one that kind of went public and said, this woman's basically a nut job. So, you know, that was wrong. But here's the best part, and then we can move on. During the viralness of the burger the second time, a lot of people sent me their own stories of the same thing.
Oh, no.
So, to be very democratic, there are people more worthy of this than me. One guy in the Midwest lives in a house, and in his garage, he had a two-car garage, and half his garage he built all these, like, tiered display things, right?
Wow.
So, he had been doing this since the late 70s, and he had little toothpicks with a flag on it that said, Des Moines, 63rd Street, 1982 Burger King.
Oh, wow.
So he had them all marked, and they were all just sitting there.
Now, the amazing thing is, as a person who loves the sciences, the first thing I think of is, I wonder what the composition is of the burger right now. And could you still eat it?
No.
How do you know?
Because it's rock hard, like petrified wood. You couldn't, you'd break your teeth off.
Well, just add some, dunk it in your coffee.
Well, no. I'm not going backwards on this project. I have to start another one.
After the nuclear war, the only thing will be left will be that burger.
I don't know, but it's just, you know.
It really is scary to think about what that's doing to your digestive tract.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Well, or that it doesn't. You know, I don't know. And honestly, I said I'm a vegetarian, but the fries, if you Google the ingredients, are scarier than the burger.
Really? Because of the fat that they're fried in?
Just a list of chemicals that are in those fries. I don't even think those are real fries. Like, I think they powderize. You know what I mean? Dehydrate all a million tons of potatoes.
Well, it's really processed. And it has to keep for long periods of time as they ship it around the world. So the stuff has got a ton of chemicals and it's ultra processed. But boy.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw the photographs and it was like hilarious. What a great art project.
Yeah.
So you had your moment of fame. And that's it. That's it, Sally. For the rest of your life, that's all.
I always say that. You know, I've got museums and books. Oh, are you the gal that did that burger?
Right, like, exactly. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I guess
God.
That's it. But you know what? There's a upside to this, too, is that several textbook companies have licensed these images, and they're in their school books now.
Wow. So, wow. So this is really scary to think that this will be the project everybody will remember. You have these reams of beautiful photographs. But no, it'll be the McDonald's burger. It's like you're living in some kind of weird hell.
Yeah, truly. But you know, the thing is, as you go through your life making stuff, you really never know what is going to grab the masses in interest, you know?
Oh, my God. Well, let's you know, I want to talk to you about you as an artist, as I do for every artist I talk to. I'm always interested in their evolution. So talk to me about, I'm always interested at that moment when you realize this is what I am. I'm an artist. When was that for you?
I think I came out of my mother like that. Like when I was around five, we lived out in the middle of nowhere outside of Winnipeg in Canada. And
oh my God. Is that as desolate as I imagine it to be?
Oh yeah. You can't, it's, you know, 40 below in the winter. We used to skate to school because they're, you know, whatever. But
you just sort of, you're yada yadaing these details. Like,
well, anyway, I can remember when I was about five.
Wow.
Somehow, I don't know. I found a big, giant bag full of really cheesy plastic flowers that somebody had trashed. Mm. And I snuck them into the house, and my mom wasn't looking. And I made a giant chandelier out of those. Like, I was five.
So
I can't even imagine how bad it looked. But
so was your mother really supportive of when you did stuff like this?
No. My poor mother had no idea who her daughter was. She was like, what the heck
God.
Is this kid doing? Do we need help? Or
did you have art classes in school?
No.
Well, wait a minute. So you got to trace this for me, Sally. So here you are outside of Winnipeg, skating to school, doing weird found object stuff. And how do you get there to New York?
Well, when I was, again, when I was very young, when I was five, my father, he used to read the funnies all the time.
Wow.
And he used to cut the funnies out and give them to me, and I learned to draw from copying Al Capp. Do you remember that cartoon?
Oh, I definitely remember Al Capp. I even remember, and you're probably too young to remember this, the newspaper strike that happened in New York, and they used to have the cartoonists come on and describe their comic strips on the TV.
Oh, my God, no, that's cool.
And Al Capp was one of them, and he had attitude, trust me.
Well, so I learned, that's how I learned to draw.
Oh, that's great.
I began by that. And then we had a neighbor in those days who worked at a printing company.
Yeah.
And every few months, you know, they would make pads of paper. It was a giant factory, right? And when they would cut off the ends, that would get taught. So he started saving boxes and boxes of paper.
Oh, wow.
And he was like this man that all the kids were scared of. He only had one leg from the war, and he was really a cantankerous old coot. So one day he called me over to the house. I was terrified. I thought he was going to kill me. And I went to the screen door. I'm like, yes. And he goes, get in here, kid. I got something for you.
Uh-oh.
I'm like, what? Oh, my God, Mark. I walked in. I thought my eyes were going to come out of my head. Three giant boxes of colored paper. And that was the beginning of it all.
Okay, but that means you could have been a visual artist other than a photographer. But
oh, yeah.
Did you study painting and start doing paintings and drawings?
Yes, I drew. And was always up to something with that. No, I left home when I was 15, so I had to quit school. My father and I had a bad argument. He was like, get out of here. Now, that sounds a little rough now, but in those days in that place, that wasn't as weird as it is now. Mm-hmm. I think now the children's services would come and arrest my parents, but in those days they didn't. So I kind of hit the road all those teenage years. I didn't have the high school experience.
Jesus.
And I ended up moving to Toronto.
Oh, okay.
When I was around 17. You know, I think I knew like two people that are musicians that had moved out there. And I thought, well, if Neil Young can move east, I can move east too. So.
Helpless.
Totally. There is a town somewhere in North Ontario.
Where they skate to school.
Exactly.
So Toronto's a pretty hip place, especially if you're an artist.
I guess it is. And I mean, it is now. I can't say as it really was back then.
Okay.
And I didn't really know what the heck hip even was. Like, I was 17 from Winnipeg. You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
So, I know. So I went out there, and I got a job at a restaurant, which I'd never done before. And, and that was the beginning of it all for me. That was life-changing. Everyone there was high-educated, very interesting people, lots of artists, because it was in a, kind of an artist neighborhood. And one day, this guy that I bartended with came in, and he said, listen, the art college over here is taking applications from adults. You don't have to have any, anything. You can just go in with a portfolio. I said, well, good luck. He said, no, dum-dum, you can come with me. We're both going to go. I'm like, what? Anyway, so I threw a portfolio together. We both went. We both got accepted, much to my, surprise. And I did that, went there for 2 years. Then I was bored out of my mind. I didn't get it. I was older than the kids. And, I was 23 or something. And all these kids were 18. And
plus the fact you had had experience by then because of what you've done.
Yeah.
So you're not only older chronologically, you're older internally.
Yes. I had had a very different life so far than most kids. But anyway, so I came in one day and I said to the guy, the head of the department, it's been real, but I can't do this anymore. I'm too bored. And in those days, trust me, things have come a long ways. Then we had teachers that, had naked little girls in drawing class and, for life drawing. And then in the end, the teacher's drawing, she had butterflies flying out of her ears. And I'm like, what? What is going on here? I can't do this. So he was like, no, please don't quit. I'm going to help you do something. Well, give me a week. So in a week, he phoned me up and he said, all right, we have a campus in Florence and we have a campus in Manhattan.
Whoa.
And you can go to either one of those. And I was like, not going to Florence because I can't speak Italian. I said, okay, I'll go to New York, I guess. So I had a little box. I had two pots. A plate, a glass. It was really sad. And I had $800 and one guy's name on a matchbook. My friend said, you don't know this guy, but if you get in trouble, call Jim.
Jesus.
So I moved to New York. I got on a plane. And, of course, I had to call that guy, Jim, the very next day.
Oh, yeah.
As I was like, where? Oh, my God. What have I done? Where am I? But this is a funny story because that guy, Jim, went on to be the one of the two singers in Blue Rodeo. I don't know if you know that Canadian
band. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and him and I became very, very good friends. And he was working, okay, wait for this. He was working at Phil Scotty's restaurant, which is the guy who said I was crazy about the burger.
Wow.
Does that, right?
Yeah.
So then he hired me. So that's how I know the burger guy from 1983 when he hired me to work in his restaurant.
So let me tell you, tell me, you end up in New York. Did you finally feel like, yeah, this is it? This is where I want to live for a bit.
No.
Wow. Okay.
No. I got there. Oh, my God, you and I could go up for, away for a week and I could tell you stories. But I got there. I had no idea what anything was, where it was. I ended up, a guy that I worked with at this restaurant came in one day and he said, hey, are you still looking for a place? I said, I am. And he goes, well, my roommate just had to move out because there was some weird drug deal that went down and they're looking for him. So he split. And I've got this other bedroom in the apartment. I said, great, I'll take that. No idea what I said yes to. And then I went down there during the day, and it was like, oh, this is a little funky, but, it's really cheap. I'm at school. I can do it. So I moved in again during the day. By the way, that ended up being Allen Ginsberg's old apartment.
Whoa.
So the night that I moved in, I had to go back up to Times Square to go to work. I worked in a nice place, right? But this was not a nice neighborhood where I was living. East Village in the early 80s was like Sandinista.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when So when I'm trying to come home from work, I grab a cab. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. I get in. Guy, where are you going? I tell him. He slams on the brakes and he goes, get out. I'm not going down there. I was like, what? So I convince him to take me down to the Lower East Side, but he said, I'm not going any further in than 4th Street. And kicked me out of the car when we got to 4th Street. And I had to run home. It was about 4 blocks. So I put all my money in my bra, except for 20 bucks that I kept in my pocket in case I got rolled, you know. I know. And I thought, where am I? Like, what happened here?
We're not in Winnipeg anymore, Dorothy.
Oh, we're not even in Toronto anymore.
When did you take up photography?
So it kind of overlaps. When I was about 14, my father was an amateur, you know, weekend photographer, and he had bought himself a new camera, and he gave me his old camera. So it was, we didn't have much in common, and we didn't do much together, but that was one thing. My dad used to do this thing, even when I was little. On Sundays, we'd go to a cemetery. Huh. That's where he would take his six-year-old daughter. And he was always really drunk because he was a bad alcoholic. So he'd pick a cemetery, and we'd go there, and we'd walk through the cemetery, and he'd know stories about everybody's tombstone. Oh, yeah, Joe Blow. I remember him.
Wow.
He was a great guy. And of course, later, he didn't know anybody. He was just making up stories about everybody who was in the graveyard. So when I got a little older and he gave me that camera, we used to do the same thing. We would get together once a week and we would go and take photographs. So I always took photos, but I never thought that I could be a real photographer. Like, that wasn't even in my wheelhouse, that's something that could be a real thing. So when I went to school, back to college, I had a painting major and a photo minor. So that was it. So I've kind of always taken photos. It wasn't until around 2000 where I just couldn't paint one more painting.
Huh.
And I thought, I'm going to take a year off or whatever, and I'm just going to take photos because that's fun.
But what's amazing, though, Sally, is that your photographs are so artistic and like you studied it for decades.
Well, you know, I'm 67.
Yeah.
I have been taking photos forever. I've been taking them my whole life and paying attention, you know, which I do.
I know that.
I just want to
mention some of your other, you know, you often photograph on themes. Like you did a bunch of photographs during the COVID in New York.
Oh, yeah.
That has to have been a frightening project.
You know, it really wasn't. I'm going to tell you the truth. I remember one night. Well, one thing is I'm a bicycler.
Oh, okay.
And it's great because it allows me to scoot around New York City at night late, you know, and not worry that I'm going to get rolled because I can.
Right.
So going down to Chinatown one night, it was around midnight, right in the height of COVID. And I remember I stopped my bike and I was like, this is amazing. This feels like 1983. There wasn't a soul around, not even a criminal, nothing. It was just dead. And it was so beautiful. I got a lot of really beautiful photos that night. So, you know.
Is that when you started to take photographs? There's a series of your photographs were of people's apartment buildings at night. And you're looking in the lit windows. it's pretty voyeuristic. I mean, obviously.
I know. It totally is.
But they're beautiful, too. They're absolutely, they're stunning photographs. Is that where that?
You know, when you're taking photos, I'm sure everybody who takes photos would agree with this. You know, you're paying attention. You're looking for something to take a photo of. Your brain is going a million miles an hour constantly. Is this worthy?
Yeah.
Does anybody care? Has everybody done this already? If they have, what new am I? You know, this is in the 10 seconds. Your brain's doing that. And then you just, you know, shoot it or not.
Do you shoot digital now?
Always.
But you didn't shoot digital originally because digital wasn't around.
No, that's true. But I was quick to switch.
Because you didn't develop you didn't develop your old color photographs yourself.
Oh, you sure?
You did. Because that is very difficult.
That's a whole other thing.
I know. I've developed black and white. I'll never develop color photographs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it's when the digital thing sort of first appeared, everybody was like, "Oh, this is a novelty. This isn't going to last." You know how people are. Yeah, right. And I was like, not so sure about that. I think we're onto something here, people. And
I jumped
right on it because, first of all, in those days, it was free. All you needed was the expensive camera.
Once you
got that,
that's right.
I had Photoshop. I had my computer.
And you could take as many photographs as you wanted.
Yep.
You're not shooting on a roll.
Right. That's right. And then, you could, in the old days, you'd take your photos, you'd take them to the lab, go pick up contact sheets if you were lazy and you weren't doing it yourself. And then you'd have to find one. And it was expensive and time consuming. This was like crazy fast. You could go home, load it up on your computer, fix it, change it, do whatever you were going to do and send it off.
Amazingly enough, Sally, we are completely out of time.
What?
I know. It's scary. It really is scary.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Okay, first of all, two things. Give out your website address so that people can go and see examples of your work.
It's SallyDaviesPhoto.com.
Okay. About UFOs.
Yeah.
Is that a subject for another show?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
And other things that you can't see?
Sure.
Okay.
There's all kinds of things we can't see. I'm game.
You're not talking about quarks, right? You're talking about other weird things.
Yeah, I'm talking about other parallel universes and all that.
Okay, this will be subject for another conversation. My returning guest tonight is photographer Sally Davies. The latest published collection of her work, and it's well worth picking up, is called California Dreamers. Sally, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, my God. Same here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.